So we are in towards the end of the 14th chapter, where Arjuna, at the end of the 14th chapter, where he has heard about the three gunas, how people in tamas, how they function, lazy, unconcerned, people in rajas who are very passionate, active, and then people who are sattvic, who are more pure, calm. And he's now inspired, he wants to go beyond, he wants to know how can I accomplish that state which is beyond the three gunas, which is glorified in the Upanishads and in the literature. He has heard about great masters who have gone beyond the three gunas, who have overcome their ego and become one with the ultimate reality. And so he wants to know what is the hallmarks of such an individual, how does such an individual function in the world, and how has he gone beyond the gunas, what is the technique. So at the end he wants to know how I can also reach that state. And that's how a good student does not only blindly just listen to the teacher, but wants to now apply this knowledge in his or her own life. And so we had heard in the last few weeks, the teacher, the Lord, answers that this individual, whether there is sattva, rajas or tamas, they may be there in his life. He may be in a lazy mood or he may be in an active mood, but he does not get attached to any particular mood, but watches them all. As an observer, he knows that at times I will be in different states, sattva, rajas and tamas. And as an observer, he's able to function in the world, watching his own body and mind also functioning. Not only the world, but also he becomes a witness of his own body and mind. And what are the hallmarks of such an individual? The second question. So the Lord says, such an individual remains unaffected. He knows that in life there will be joy and sorrow, heat and cold, success and failure, praise and criticism. But having gone beyond the worldly praise and worldly success, he has accomplished so much, much more than you and I get affected. You know, somebody praises me, I get affected. Somebody criticizes me, I get depressed. But he has encountered that highest state of realization. And in that state, the person is beyond worldly praise and criticism because he has experienced the highest joy. And why is that? Because he has become one with the total reality, the Brahman, the consciousness. He has become one with that. And the world at that moment cannot touch him. And we have found in the lives of great prophets and saints, no matter what the world throws at them, they, because they are established in that highest state of knowledge, the highest state of truth, they're able to overcome all worldly problems. If you look at Mirabai, you look at Tukaram, you look at Sant Gyaneshwar, look at Jesus, how many problems they had, but they were able to overcome them. So the last, this question is, how has this individual gone beyond the gunas? And a little of that was addressed last week, that through the right knowledge, through the knowledge that I am that consciousness who at this moment is functioning in this world through this body, mind and intellect, and using the body, mind and intellect as an equipment, he functions in the world and realizes that this equipment that I have, this body is bound to deteriorate. This mind will have joys and sorrows. This intellect will have praise and blame, but he rises above that. As we have talked about, just as a surfer can surf above the highest waves and enjoy it, so similarly, such an individual is able to enjoy the world. He does not suffer, but enjoys the world just as a surfer. So today we'll continue on how we can go beyond that, because that's what we want to know. So how does this knowledge affect us, and how can we use, what other means we can use? We have talked about the path of knowledge. Today he shall talk about the path of bhakti or devotion or love for God, how that also takes us to the highest. So verse number 26. Mamcha yovyabhicharena
bhakti yogena sevate
sagunan samatityaitan
Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate.
Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate.
So, mom, here Krishna is talking about I. Why? When he says I, Krishna says I, he does not only mean I, Krishna, the flute player of Vrindavan, but he talks about I as the total consciousness, as the substratum of the whole universe. In this I, when Krishna uses, he identifies himself with Brahman, the total consciousness that supports and pervades the whole universe, the entire creator, sustainer, destroyer, everything in one. He says, mam cha, and he says, one who, yaha means whoever that person may be, man or woman, young or old, short or tall, black or white, doesn't matter what race, color or country. Whoever avyabhicharena, vyabhichara is actually a very strong word. He uses it in a couple of places. Avyabhichari, I hate to use that word, but avyabhichari is a prostitute. So a prostitute who gives herself to everyone. So he says, one who turns toward me unprostituting, we'll explain what that means. Avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. Bhakti means love or devotion. So one who loves me exclusively, just as a lady who is devoted to her husband loves him and him alone and does not, I mean, she may regard or respect other members of the family, but her love for the husband is single-pointed. So similarly, Krishna says that person's love for me is single-pointed, not distributed among many. That's why he used the word prostitute, because the prostitute is one who, no matter whoever comes to that individual, she shares her love with him. So we'll talk a little more about that, why he uses such strong language. But he says, one who loves me, bhakti yogena sevate, one who loves me exclusively, and sevate, and serves me, serves the Lord and loves the Lord. What happens to such an individual? Sa gunan samati tyai. So guna, he goes beyond the gunas. What are the gunas? Gunas are the vasanas, the sattva, rajas and tamas, etan. So these gunas which I have described in the 14th chapter, all these verses, such an individual goes beyond the sattva, rajas and tamas, brahma bhuyaya kalpate. And kalpate means he becomes fit or deserving to become Brahman. He becomes one with Brahman. So this shloka needs a lot of discussion, so we'll spend some time studying about it, because there are some very important points that we need to address. So the first point is that the student says, I am ready. See, because Arjuna has heard in all these 25 verses, you know, what are the gunas and how important it is to go beyond, and how can I go beyond, and how from tamas you should go to rajas. From rajas, go to sattva, purity, and then go beyond. He says, Guru, I am ready. Okay, I am ready. I am ready to, you say, surrender everything. Okay, I am ready to give up my house, my job, my wife and children. And I surrender to you, Guru. Now you take me. And that's a lot of the religions, you know, a lot of people have this idea that I surrender to the Guru and then the Guru will take me. And Guru will take care of, you know, all my needs. And Swami Chinmayananda says, look, Sonny, I'm not a mule. I'm not a mule, Guru. I'm not going to carry you on my back and take you to that state of realization. Maybe some, you know, gurus may promise it. But in Vedanta, there are no promises made. There are no guarantees given. Because Vedanta is an individual path. Each one of us has to traverse the path by ourselves. The Guru can help. The Guru can be a guidepost. Guru can tell us how to go. But Guru is not going to take us. Actually, no Guru can take you anywhere. No religion, no scripture. If anybody promises that I can take you to the highest state, that person is talking in ignorance. Because think about it. How did we come to the state we are? How did we become humans? First we were protozoa, then we became a fish, then I became a land animal, then I became an ape, Mr. Ape Man. And then from Mr. Ape Man, I learned to shave every day, and I became Mr. Man. So, how did I evolve? Did any guru carry me? No, I did it on my own. That's what the evolution, Darwin's theory of evolution is, that we started as the lowest and we gradually started with a plant and then became a fish and animal and human. So, through my own effort, I have come so far. I mean, we may not know it. You say, I don't know when I was an animal or when I was a bird. All I remember is, you know, this particular life, which is true. But our scriptures tell us that we have gone through 8.4 million births, 84 lakh yoni, before you become a human. So you have had to have gone through all those struggles, you know, even a monkey and a dog and a cat and a mosquito and all those, before I became a human. And so it was through your own effort, through our own. It is a gradual evolution. So this state, which is called as the God state or the saints, you know, the saints and God we consider as one, because we consider these saints and prophets have become one with God. That's why we even chant Namami Chinmayam Devam Sadgurum Brahma Vidvaram. I prostrate to my Guru Swami Chinmayananda, who is here, because he is the knower of Brahman. And what we say, one who knows Brahman becomes one with that. So our Guru has become one with the total consciousness, and he is the one that is guiding us. That's why whatever little I know, it is because of the grace of my Guru Swami Chinmayananda and other acharyas from whom I was blessed enough to receive this knowledge. So the teacher can guide us, but I myself have to evolve. It is like a quantum leap. It's just as from a deep sleep, I become a dreamer, I start dreaming, and then I become awake, and then I function in the world. So that is called the three states: deep sleep, dream, and waking. Deep sleep, dream, and waking. But the state that Arjuna is aspiring to, the state that we all need to aspire to, is called the fourth state, or the Turiya state. Turiya state, where I continue to function in the world. It's not that I become a useless piece of furniture. I continue to function in the world, but I work from a higher state of awareness. Just as these saints and prophets, they are walking and talking amongst us, but they live in a higher world of the Brahman. And they work from that state. They work out of compassion for us. They don't need to work. They don't need to do anything. But they do it because of compassion for us, to guide us so that we may also reach that highest state. So what is required is effort. Effort is required. And Krishna says the main point that in this, besides knowledge, is bhakti, is surrender. And when you come to that state of surrender, nobody asks your history, you know, whether you are a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian, whether you are black or white, whether you are a saint or sinner. You may have been the worst sinner, but once you surrender in total love and devotion to the Lord, then he accepts you. But the surrender is very important, because that for us is very difficult, because we have this little ego that I am somebody special, and who is this God, and why should I surrender to him? What am I going to gain out of it? See, that's the first question. What is in it for me? Why should I go for this knowledge? What is am I going to get out of it? So we'll talk about that, how this knowledge will benefit us. We have been talking over the past few weeks, but we'll cover that a little more today. And at that point, when there is a total surrender to the Lord, then your history is not asked. If you look at Ratnakar, he was a criminal, he was a daku, he was a murderer and a dacoit. But when he decided to change his life and surrender to Ram, and just totally his ego was dissolved, then he became Valmiki. He became a great saint, and everything ended, because his ego ended. The old Ratnakar died and a new saint Valmiki was born, great Rishi was born. So he says, whoever that person may be, should be putting the effort. Now let us come to this controversial word, which is called unprostituting, avyabhicharini. When we look at our life, we are attached to so many things. You know, we sell ourselves to everything and anything. You know, of course I want God, But then, you know, some friend comes, I want that. Then another job comes, I want that. Money, I want that. With jewelry, I want that. House, I want that. So we not only love God, but we love all those things equally. And any little passing fantasy, you know, I'm not going to go to the Gita class. You know why? Because there is a sale in Valley Plaza. Or, you know, there is a party going on. So even though Swamiji is here, you know, my friend has invited me. I must go to the party. Or a TV show or a football game or anything, any little thing takes us away from the spiritual path. And we do not put all our effort in the world. If we want to succeed, we do that. We do that in the world if we want to succeed. And we understand, you know, like a person who is going to medical school, what does he do after 12 years of high school? Then he'll do 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of graduate, 6 years of fellowship and training, 14 years. So 18 plus 14, 32 years of his life he devotes. Why? So that he should become a doctor, he should become a specialist. And we think that's okay. You know, yeah, 32 years he needs to. Otherwise, how is he going to become a successful doctor? Because he's going to make money. Or, like, to give an example, my niece's husband, he started a new internet company in the Bay Area a few years back. And it's very interesting. When he started, he used to work 16, 18 hours a day on his company. Even one time, I remember, we were all having lunch in a restaurant. We were all talking and he was on his cell phone working on his company. It was almost rude. But people say it's okay, you know, he's starting. And actually he did, after 5, 6, 7 years of constant effort, where he hardly ever saw his wife, he never hardly ever came home. He was traveling in Philippines and Japan and Vietnam. Now he's the, you know, he is the head of a large company where he has branches in not only here, but in New York, Philippines, Vietnam, Japan. And he's, you know, has so many investors, he's thinking of going public. So there we say it's okay, you know, yeah, he needs to work 16, 18 hours because otherwise how is he? And, you know, we accept that. But when it comes to spirituality, which is a much greater achievement than making your own internet company, becoming a doctor, or becoming a successful businessman, I don't have time. You know, I'm so busy. God, look, I came to church one time on Sunday. Isn't that enough for you? You know, hurriedly in the morning, quickly, you know, I'm getting late. Quickly, we do aarti, you know, for 2 seconds. Natatra suryo bhati, or while we are running out. We don't have time for him, you know, and the one who gave us everything. And that is the first thing people drop. First thing, they won't drop anything else. You know, like there was a very famous, this is a famous joke. He says, "Achha hua meri mala tooti, main to Ram bhajan se chuti." He says, "Oh God, my mala has broken, you know, so now rosary, so now I cannot chant your name until I buy a new one." So we have every possible excuse to drop the spirituality, which is the main purpose of life. The main reason we came on this earth, the main reason I have become a human being is to reach that God state. But we postpone that, you know, after retirement. Abhito, I'm so busy. You don't know how God, how much work I have. You know how much work I have. When do I have time for you? After 65, when I retired, by that time, after 65, your body aches and your brain hardly works. And you have been so attached to your children and grandchildren, then after 65, you just get more attached. You are so more, all you're worried about is your arthritis or my high blood pressure medicine, my cholesterol is going up. And that's all, you know, and then you're going from one surgery to another, one doctor to another. That's all these senior citizens' life is. I see them. Their highlight of that day is when they have to go to the doctor, you know, because usme 3-4 ghante aram se nikal jayenge. So where do you have time for God? That's why they say that start from now on. Start from now on. People say, "Guru, I'm ready to start. But tell me, from tomorrow I'm going to start. Kal se, I'm definitely going. So tomorrow, why not from today?" No, tomorrow. You know, tomorrow. And then tomorrow you ask him, "Okay, today are you going to start?" "No, you know what it is? It's November 1st, November 2nd, New Year is coming. January 1st, Guru, I'll be in your ashram and I'll be working for you and I'll be..." So we are always looking for sometime in the future when I will start, and in the process, you know, the whole life goes. You know, that's Dinya Minyo Saya Prata Shishira Vasanta Punarayat. He says, Shankaracharya, he says, day and night will pass, spring, summer, winter will come and go, but you will still remain with your own foolishness. So when are you going to turn your mind towards the higher? When are you going to? Otherwise, how many lifetimes you have gone through this, you know, this living just for myself, my family, acquiring, possessing? Enough is enough. Now at least you have this knowledge. Wake up and decide that from today onward, I'm going to start living the Gita life. I'm not only going to study the Gita, but bring it into my life, change my life, change the direction of my goal. Yes, I will continue to work. God says, if you are too busy in the morning for me, that's okay. You're busy at work, take me with you. God doesn't say that you sit all day in the puja room and no, you are at work, take me with you. Serve the world as a manifestation of the Lord. You know, Ashtamurti Grit Deva Pujanam, Raman Maharishi says, this world is nothing but the Lord. Air, space, fire, water, earth, mind, intellect, and ego are eight forms of this Lord. So the whole world is the Lord Himself. Everything, the plants, the animals, birds, fish, everything came from that. So serve the world as a servant of the Lord, not with ego, but with an attitude of service, that I see the Lord in every one of them. And when I'm seeing my patients, or when I'm seeing my students, or when I'm serving my family members or my guests, I see the Lord. And we find so many examples in the world where people devote everything to worldly pursuits, but they don't have time for God. That's why in the Bible it says God is a very jealous God. That now they use such words for God. They don't mean jealous in the sense that He cannot tolerate anything else. But what it means is that if you want to reach me, you have to make me the overwhelming goal. Everything else has to become secondary. Whatever activity, I was talking to, actually we had a very beautiful sitar concert. I think some of you came. Those who didn't come missed an outstanding show. And it was so interesting. I was walking with this sitar player. We went for a walk in the morning. They stayed at our house. And I asked him, how many years does it take to become a good sitar player? He says, well, let me explain to you, Anil. He says, 15 years of daily practice. Okay, it's not, I'm not talking 1 hour, 2 hours, 6-8 hours of daily practice, up to 10 hours. 15 years it takes for a sitar player, or any classical Indian musician, for a sitar player to be a good sitar player where he can please the audience, it takes me 15 years. Okay, that's very good. He says, but then another 15 years it takes for a sitar player to please himself, that I have done a good job. You know, the audience may say, wah, 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 but the sitar player is not happy. Of course, this was flute, sorry, not sitar, a flute player. But a flute player, he says, for himself to be content that I have done a good job takes another 15 years. Okay. And then he says, but to please your guru takes another 15 years. So 45 years of practice you have to do before you can say that you are a great musician or a great sitar player. So what I'm saying is that dedication is required to succeed in anything. I mentioned Nureyev. He's one of the greatest ballet dancers ever in the history. There was no greater male ballet dancer than him, Rudolf Nureyev. He was a Russian. And they say when you see him performing on the stage, it's like a gazelle. He's dancing so effortlessly, so beautifully. Just he's floating on the stage. His foot doesn't even touch the ground. So how does he get this beautiful talent? And somebody asked him. So they said that when you see him practice hours at a time, he practices so hard that his feet start bleeding. His feet are bleeding because he's trying. So it takes him hours of practice. This kind of ballet doesn't come just overnight. They get ankle fractures, bruises, knee gone. Look at these gymnasts, you know, who are at 12 or 13 or 14, who are world-class gymnasts in the Olympics. I mean, they spend hours. They break their ankle, their knee, their hip, and multiple injuries and multiple bruises, and they, the coach makes them practice till actually blood runs from their feet, and then only they become accomplished performers, accomplished gymnasts, accomplished musicians. So when worldly success needs so much effort, then why do we think that spirituality can be a part-time process? You know, it's okay, aadha ghanta kar liya bahut hai, you know, God is enough for you, half an hour. Out of 24 hours, the one who has given us all the 24 hours, we don't even have half an hour to give him every day. We say, sit down and study the Gita every evening for half an hour. I don't have time, too busy. The best example, I was reading about Saint Teresa of Avila. She's a masterful example of how she could navigate these two worlds. You know, she was born in the around the 15th or 16th century in Italy. She was born in a very prosperous home. Her parents were rich. She was educated. She was, in those days, very few girls were educated, but she was sent, she was taught how to read and write, very cultured, very intelligent. At the same time, very headstrong. She was very strong-willed. And she would not listen to her parents. Her parents, you know, in those days, how what it was, the thing was, okay, girl has to grow up, maybe get a little education, then get married, be devoted to her husband, have children, stay home, and that's it. And that was a woman's life. There hardly anybody worked outside the home. So she said, I don't want all this. You don't want all this? You're so beautiful. You're so, you know, you can get a very nice husband, and you can be married to a noble man, and you can be rich and happy. I don't want all that. I want something that is permanent. All that is temporary. If my husband will be temporary, that wealth will be temporary. I don't want that. I want something permanent. They said, but you know what? You're throwing away all that for what? She said, I want something permanent. And then it is, she has listed in her chronicles how her struggle was. It took her 45 years, I mean, till from childhood till she was 45 years old. And she writes it very beautifully. She says that on the one hand, I feel an attraction towards God. I want to go. But then on the other hand, the world is pulling me. They're not letting me go there. I feel so much pleasure when I'm remembering God and chanting his name and reading the good books. But then this world does not let me. And I'm constantly in between these two worlds, struggling, you know, sometime here, sometime there. I want to go here, but my parents, my, you know, the whole world doesn't allow us. You know, but why they say, you know, why is she going like that? Let us keep her down with us. If somebody's rising, nobody else wants. And it took her 45 years. Finally, she reached the stage what is called Sahaj Samadhi, which is described in our Upanishads, where it is effortless awareness, effortless abidance in that self. And that state, when she reached, then she became a great guide, a great mystic. She gave us wonderful teachings. So the point is that saints are there in all the faiths. You know, people, whoever turns their mind towards God can reach it. And that's the same state was reached by Mirabai and Tukaram and Buddha. Buddha also reached it, all the Sikh gurus. But what is required is detachment. You cannot be attached to too many things and at the same time be attached to God. You have to detach. You have to give up. Talking about giving up reminds me of a little story. There were these three Irishmen. I hope there is nobody Irish here. As it is said that Irishmen love their drinks. So there were these three brothers, Sean, Paddy, and Robbie. And so Sean would go to the bar every Friday evening in Ireland, and he would order three beers. And I think I told that in your home. So he would order three beers, and he would sip one at a time, and three. So the bartender says, Sean, look, the beer gets flat. You know, why don't you order one, finish it, then I'll give you a second, I'll give you a third. Why do you want all three at the same time? No, I have to have all three at the same time. He says, why? He says, see, my brother Paddy, he went to US, and my brother Robbie went to Australia. And as long as we were together, we used to every Friday evening meet at a bar and have beers. And that's how we did. Each one had a beer. And we pledged that when we separate, no matter which part of the world we are in, as long as we live, we are always going to, on a Friday evening, be at a bar and drink three beers. That is my ritual. That's how I remember my brothers. And as long as we live, that's going to happen. So bartender said, oh, that's wonderful. You love your brothers. So every Friday, Sean would come, get three beers and drink. And so it went on for 2-3 years. One day he comes, he says, give me only two beers. Two beers, what happened? You know, his bartender is worried. Maybe his, one of his brothers died, you know, because this was rest of the life. Didn't want to ask anything. He gave him two beers. The whole bar became silent because they all knew him. They were so sad, you know, one of his brothers died or what happened. So he had finished the two beers. He came to pay the bill. So bartender finally couldn't resist. He says, Sean, I'm so sorry, you know. Which one of your brothers passed away, Paddy or Robbie? He said, Are yaar, they are both fine. Actually, I have given up drinking. He said, Maine chodna pi diya. Maine peena chod diya. So not that kind of detachment, you know. This is a false detachment. What you truly have to do, you really have to give up and wake up to that higher state. And what is required in that state? Swami Chinmayananda says, the body, mind and intellect, all our three, just to revise this chart for those who are new, with the body, I'm a human being. My body, I become a perceiver of objects. With my mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. And the vasanas are the gunas or the tendencies which make me work. And Om is that state of God realization. So the body, mind and intellect, all three have to be involved. You cannot say, emotionally, I love God. Intellectually, I have the right knowledge. But with my body, I'm going to enjoy life, indulge in all the sense pleasures, drink, smoke, spend all my time in enjoying. And mentally, I love God, intellectually, but my body, I don't want to. No, he says, no, it's like when you want to sleep. Suppose I'm a waker, I want to sleep. All my three, my body, mind and intellect, all have to be involved in the process of sleeping. Say, supposing at my body level, I have a pain, right? I have a body pain. I can't sleep. I have a headache. I have a body ache. I can't sleep. Or mentally, I am emotionally disturbed. You know, somebody said something. I am unhappy. Or then again, neend nahi aa rahi. You know, my child is not well or something happened. I cannot sleep. Or intellectually, you know, my business is not doing well or I have not been successful. I have some problem that I have not solved. So either of those three are not working in unison, I cannot sleep, whether physically or mentally or intellectually. So if I cannot just to go from waking to sleep, which I do every day, you know, if I cannot, I have to have all three, then they say from this ego, from this perceiver, feeler and thinker, if you want to rise to that highest state, then all three have to be involved. Physically, I have to daily do some physical activity, some prayer, some meditation, some service, you know, serve the world. Mentally, I have to love the Lord. I have to develop a relationship of love, not of fear, not of that there is some horrible creature sitting up above who's ready to punish me. Love. And with the intellectually, I have to have the right knowledge. I have to study the Bhagavad Gita. I have to go to these acharyas. And once all my faculties are fully involved, then such a person goes beyond vasanas. That's why he says, Sa gunan samatita, having samatitya, having crossed these etan, samatitya, having crossed these gunas, brahma bhuyaya kalpate. What do we mean by crossing the gunas? We have talked about that before also. But they say that from tamas, from becoming a lazy, useless individual, you at least become an active member of society. You go into rajas and you contribute, you participate. But a rajasic individual still works out of selfishness, out of desire. From rajas, they say, become a sattvic individual, where you are working for others, you are working unselfishly, you see the oneness. But a true devotee of the Lord who has the right knowledge, even sattva cannot bind him, because he realizes that in life there will be tamas, there will be rajas, there will be sattva. At times I will be tired, at times I will be active, at times my mind will be peaceful. But he has gone beyond the fluctuations of the mind, as we have talked about. He goes beyond the gunas. And why should we go beyond the vasanas or the gunas? because the vasanas or the gunas are what cause desires in my mind and intellect, thoughts and desires. And with those thoughts and desires, I do selfish actions. And the more selfish actions I do, the more my ego becomes strong, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. And the more the ego becomes strong, the further away you get from reality. The more I say I, the further you go from he, or she, you know, whatever the god or goddess you worship. That's why this, in the Upanishad, it says, Aham Brahmasmi, I am that. When they say I am that, it does not mean that I am God. What it means is that alone is. That's why in Kabir Das Ji also says, Prem Gali Bari Sankri. You know, the path of love is very narrow. Either you are there or God is there. You can't have both. You can't say I am God. Again, I does not mean that you become a useless piece of furniture. But that when that I disappears, then he works through me and he becomes the master of my life. He becomes the charioteer. As you can see here, Krishna was driving Arjun's chariot through to success. He took him where everything worked for him. So when you surrender to the Lord and you become his servant, then he guides you, he leads you, he carries you. And such a person, that ego becomes dead. Ego again becomes dead means, does not, as I said, does not mean that he is not good for anything. In fact, he becomes such a powerful instrument, because when the Lord is functioning through me and the Lord is the Lord of all, then I become a very powerful instrument. And that's why Buddha passed away 2,500 years ago and we still talk about him. Jesus left us 2,000 years ago. We still remember him. Swami Chinmayananda left his body in 1993. And in every Chinmaya mission all over the world, you know, people are remembering his Gita and talking, and there are people, you know, like me talking, remembering. Shankaracharya Ji left us, you know, 500-700 years ago. We still remember him. Why? Because they became one with that reality. Their ego was dead, and their life then becomes a life of service. That's why he says, Bhakti Yogena Sevate. Sevate means he serves. Because this knowledge is not only meant for your puja room or for your temple or church, but Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary says that you have to take this knowledge out into the marketplace and see the Lord and become an instrument of service. And then such a person, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, he becomes deserving of becoming Brahman. So as we said, Brahman does not mean that he becomes God, you know, that people misunderstand that. What it means, you know, even though we revere these saints as God, Jesus we worship as God, Buddha is worshipped as God, Shankaracharya is called Bhagwan Shankaracharya, Raman Maharishi is called Bhagwan Raman Maharishi. But that is the disciples worship them. They don't claim to be God, but they say very clearly that I don't exist, and the Lord alone exists, and he functions through me. So that is called becoming Brahman. That is giving up the individuality and letting the Lord function through them and becoming one with that. When the ego dies, see, when the perceiver, feeler, thinker dies, then this body, mind, and instrument, intellect becomes an instrument of this, of service. So that is the beauty of this wonderful verse where it says that we have to choose. And you have to decide what is your goal in life and how you are going to take it. It's a very beautiful verse. I would welcome any comments.
You mentioned the four states, sleep, waking, and turiya being the highest state to reach.
Yes, turiya, yes.
And then there's nirvana.
And it's the same. Nirvana, turiya are all the same. Sahaj Samadhi. Sahaj Samadhi. These are all different words. Samadhi means, Sama Adhi means remaining established in that truth. Sahaj means effortless. Effortless abidance in that knowledge. That is, like Buddha calls it Nirvana. Some call it Turiya state. Some call it Sahaj Samadhi. But it is Nirvikalpa. We'll talk about that more in the next verse. Where there are no objects. When Swamiji in his commentary also says that when the mind becomes still, in your meditation, in your prayer, the mind becomes totally still. And when the mind is still, and when the vasanas have been minimized, in such a saint or an individual, he has minimum desires, mind is completely still, thoughts have become stilled, then in that silence of his meditation, he experiences the Lord presence. And initially it happens once in a while when you start meditating. But once that person has reached that state of total abidance in the self, what they call Sahaj Samadhi, then such a person, in the Sri Krishna in the 15th chapter, he says, Yad Gatvana Nivartante Tad Dham Paramam Mama. That abode of mine, once the individual reaches, then he or she never comes down from his state of sainthood or the state of abidance in the truth. Sahaj means effortless. Samadhi means to be abide in that state, which also we are doing in the Thursday evening. You know, dhyanam nama swarupasya sahajam bhanam uchyate. What is meditation? Effortless abidance in our true state. Our true state, we are actually that Om, that Brahman, functioning through the world. So, abidance in that state is called meditation.
And when you reach this state, you're always in that state?
Yes. You still function in the world. You go through rajas, tamas and all that. But you never fall from that. Once a person is established in, it's like once you have woken up from your dream, do you ever go back to that dream? Or do you say, you know, in my dream, I had $1,000,000, you know, in gold coins, but now I want to bring those million. You can't. You don't go back into the dream. You can't. So similarly, once you have woken up, and you don't go back into the foolishness. It's like you were a child and you were doing some foolish things. And now having grown up, will you do the same foolish things that you did as a child? No, right? Because you have learned better. Say you used to maybe do any mischievous thing. We all did, you know, do little mischievous thing. But having now grown up, now I don't do those things. At least hopefully I don't. Some of us still never grow up. I'm one of those. But most of us, once having understood, we don't repeat the foolish mistakes. So such an individual will not repeat the same mistakes as you and I commit, which we do every day. And he has compassion for us because he sees that we are struggling. And that's why all the scriptures were written, the Gita, the Bible, the Quran, all of them were written for us to wake up.
Push people, be more assertiveness.
Right. No, Swami Chinmayananda was the most assertive individual you have ever met. I'm telling you, if you are in his presence, the way he used to speak, I used to be scared of him. Now, I have come to know him more through his books. You cannot find a more assertive individual than he was. And he was working in a corporate world where he was running 200 centers. And there were 200 branches of the Chinmaya Mission. And he made sure that all of them worked, followed the right, you know, curriculum, followed the right, you know, they had bylaws, rules, regulations. Chinmaya Mission works like a corporation. We all have bylaws we have to follow. We have to have regular meetings. We have the treasurer and secretary. We have to send annual reports, quarterly reports to Bombay. And all our minutes are sent. So it works like a business, like a corporation. But unlike the business which is only making money for an individual or for a corporation, here the job of the Chinmaya Mission is to serve the world and spread the knowledge. So he structured it like a business. It was absolute, and he was very assertive, he was very strong, because he realized that what happened is that people have been doing things in a particular way. Like, you know, in India, things used to go on, never start on time. You know, things will start 1 hour late, 2 hours. Even now when you go, people will never show up on time. And his idea was that if I say 8 o'clock, it has to start at 8. And he started this tradition in Chinmaya Mission that never even a minute late. And you will find that everywhere in the Chinmaya Mission, no program starts even a minute late. Even the music concert we had the other day, how many ever people were, we started. So to change people's habits is not easy, and he used to do that. But what you're talking about is the corporate world where you have to be dishonest and cheat and lie and all. Then such a person cannot evolve spiritually. But even in the business world, you find people are, some of them are very good, like Bill and Melinda Gates, to give an example. He made his business how by founding the company which made computers. Now, his net worth when it was $5 billion, I remember he used to give $1 billion every year for charity, a 20% of his net worth. Today, his net worth is close to $100 billion. It continues to grow, and he still gives. His name has become synonymous with charity. Bill and Melinda Gates, they are working against Ebola, against polio. I mean, he's living in the corporate world, and look how much he's doing. And so if you cannot say that, oh, to be successful in the corporate world, you have to be a crook. No, I mean, you can do that. You can keep your values intact and still be very successful. And the Lord helps. When you are working for him, he helps.
How do you interpret his detachment if he's still so involved?
No, he's involved not in his company. He's involved in service. He's all the time, most of his time is spent in projects. He wants to see projects are successful. He's selecting worthwhile projects. He's giving money. He's making sure the money is properly spent. And most of his time, so he is detaching. He's not spending that much time in his corporation. He has to work. See, detachment does not mean you put on orange clothes and go live in the Himalayas. That we have a wrong idea of detachment. Detachment, we think, means do nothing and become a useless piece of furniture. That's not it. You have to continue to work, but instead of working for me and my family, I work for the whole world, whole universe, and see the whole universe as an expression of the Lord. And that's what's detachment. Detachment does not mean that you don't. There are some saints who actually do detach, and they go to the Himalayas and they meditate. And if that is their vasana, that is wonderful. But there are other saints. Swami Chinmayananda used to work 21 hours a day. He literally slept only 3 hours at night, and he would work 20 to 21 hours. You might say, is he detached? He was detached. He was working for the Chinmaya mission. Yes.
Also, like to point out that Bill Gates looks like he dresses from Walmart.
Yes.
He never really spends too much money on glamorous stuff. You know?
Absolutely. He probably drives a Toyota or something, I'm sure, or Escort or something. You're right. Absolutely. Yeah, he doesn't care about his clothes, about his appearance. Yeah, that's a great, very good point. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's right. You never see him in a fancy suit. I've never seen him. Yeah.
Always like business casual.
Right. So that's what happens. These people then, and see, the reason he does it, not to become famous, but he realizes that the Almighty God has given me what I have. And the wonderful thing is, the more you give for him, the more the Lord gives you. Like I told you, he started with $5 billion and he was giving $1 billion a year. Now his worth is close to $100 billion. It keeps growing every year. The more you give, the more he gives you. We have this wrong idea, you know, if I give, then what will happen to my money? I work so hard for it. Don't worry about it. Once you give in the right cause to the right person, with the right attitude, without the ego of I and my, that I am the giver, and he takes care of me. He takes care of us. Because he has, see, he has Lakshmi. He has the whole world's wealth with him, you know. So you don't think he can replace yours? He will do that. That's a good point. Thank you.
Then in the next life, he actually is worse off because he has additional vasanas.
Yes.
And it becomes more and more difficult.
Right. Yeah, that's why the Lord has given us a choice. You know, he has given us a choice. He has. Humans are the only animals that have been given the intellect to choose. Mm-hmm. And if you make the wrong choices and you acquire wrong vasanas, you will have problems. You will suffer the consequences. And next life, you may be born as maybe a dog or a monkey or something, because you have not shown yourself worthy to be a human being. And so then you have to go through that dog or a monkey's life, and then to come back to be a human. So, yes, but there are others who, having acquired this knowledge, they say, okay, now I have decided from today onwards, not from tomorrow. And they decide to change their life. And we have found in so many people, this knowledge has changed. You know, millions of people all over the world actually are waking up to this, even though they say that the world is becoming more criminal and more crime and more murder. Actually, though, also this knowledge is also spreading in its own way. There are so many people who are studying the scriptures and the Bhagavad Gita, and millions of people are meditating every day. They never, nobody used to meditate. Now yoga and meditation has become so prevalent. All over the world, this knowledge is spreading, and they are predicting that in a few hundred years or so, the spirituality will, there'll be a resurgence of spirituality. The reason we think the world is worse is because of the internet. Because we think that anybody gets murdered in Canada, you know, two people get shot, oh, the whole world knows about it. So we think that is, people always used to get shot in Canada. It was just that we never heard about it.
Yeah.
So because of the internet, we multiply. And we think that the world is worse off. The Muslims were killing the Christians, and even the Crusades, they were killing Jews, and Muslims have always been killing each other. Hindu and Muslims have been fighting. But unfortunately, because of the internet, we multiply everything, and we, and the newspapers love to magnify it, you know. Like if they say, if the dog bites man, it's nothing. But if man bites dog, yeah, that is a news. They will. So that's what it is. They love sensational news, you know, some girl got raped or some missing girl. You know, girls used to go missing, but now they have big posters and on TV. I mean, it's good that they, you know, but then what happens is we all think that it's a lot worse, but it's not any worse than it always was.
Saint, who was a criminal and a murderer, how did the transformation happen? Does anyone know?
Yeah, no, there's the story. We have told about that many times, but I can very briefly tell you. Then we don't have to do the next verse. The next verse is very complicated, so I'm glad I don't have to address it today. That will take more than an hour, so next week we'll do that. It's very, very difficult. I hope I can do it. I'll try. So he was a criminal, a murderer, and he used to rob people. I think most people have heard the story. On the way path, he would, in the forest, he would rob people, take their money and kill them. So one time this saint came, Naradji, and he did the same thing. He stopped him. And he said, give me all you have. He said, I'm just a monk, and all I have is this begging bowl. If you want, you can take it. I don't have any money. You know, I gave up everything. Then Naradji asked him, why do you do this? You know, he says, well, my wife and children live in the village, and I need to earn a living for them. So that's why I kill people. And he used to kill them so there would be no witnesses. He said, okay, you do it for your wife and children. You know that you are incurring sin. He says, yeah, I know I'm incurring sin, but I'm doing it for them, not for me. He says, okay, you can tie me up, leave me here, and go ask your wife and children if they will share in your sin. And then you can come back and kill me. I won't run away. You can tie me up. So he tied him up, went home, and asked his wife, you know, I've committed all these murders. Will you share in my sin, half the sin, because you get half the money? She said, no, I didn't tell you to kill anybody. If you kill, that's your problem. You are supposed to take care of us. If you choose the path of murder or the path of good, that's your problem. I'm not going to share your sin. Then he asked the children, will you share? They said, Papa, sorry, you know, we can't. Anyway, you cannot share anybody's sins. So we can't do it. So then he realized that what a mistake he has made. So then he comes back and he apologizes to the saint, because something, I think the saint's presence awoke in him his own, you know, good nature. And so it is said that he then asked the saint, what should I do? So he said, chant the name of Ram. So then he said, okay, I'm going to sit down and chant. And he kept on chanting Ram, Ram. And I think the saint blessed him, because the saints do have that power. And it is said he stayed for years in that one place, just chanting Ram, 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 Ram. And to the extent that actually an ant hill grew around him. The ants actually came and made a home around him, because he didn't move for years. You know, these saints, their metabolism becomes so slow when they're in deep meditation that they can live for years without food and water. And the ants actually built a nest around him, an ant hill. And it is said that same saint, after several years, he said, you know, I had left that guy here, and let me see if he's still here. And he came by and he saw this ant hill, and something told him, and he moved that ant hill, and that man was there. And that's why his name became Valmiki. Valmiki means ant hill. So he named him that. And then that old criminal had died, and a saint was born. And he actually became one of the great Sanskrit scholars and wrote a beautiful story of Ramayana in Sanskrit. He had never gone to school, but he could compose in Sanskrit. How could he do that? You know, it was the Lord working through him. And it is said that Ratnakar was dead and a saint was born in his place.
What happened to his wife?
Oh, we don't know about that. They probably managed on their own. As you know, they said, our father is gone. They probably didn't know what happened to him, where he died. So Yeah, they, you know, as I mean, suppose somebody dies, what happens to the wife and children? They manage. The world goes on. You know, nobody misses anybody. We think we are very important. But when we are gone, people might remember us for a week or 10 days. And then, you know, they say, oh, chala gaya bichara, bada accha admi tha. You know, he was a nice man. He's dead now. And life moves on. Life goes on. Nothing stops for anybody. They say institutions go on. Individuals may come and go. And that's one thing we have to remember. If we think we are very important anywhere, forget that. Because the moment you are gone, somebody else will replace you. And it says it might be even better than you, you know, whoever comes. So don't think that the world can't do without you. The world is fine. World, you know.
Nobody's irreplaceable.
Yeah, nobody's irreplaceable. That's true.
I have as Hindus, we are told whatever good deeds we do, it goes to the well-being of our children. How do you relate that?
No, that is true though. Because see, when it's natural that when you do good, when you're a good person, then you will automatically teach good values to your children and your children will become good. And it is said very well. That it said in one place that if you take care of others' children, he takes care of your children. The Lord is, that's what I'm saying. If you do even one, tum ek paisa doge, wo 10 lakh dega. When you do for him even a little bit, when you do it unselfishly, without ego, without the sense of I or my, if you work, do his work, he comes and he says, he comes and becomes your servant. Actually, we are doing a book called Bhakti Sudha on Thursday. We just finished. Actually, that book is in the office. If you want to hear about Bhakti, it's a very small book, only $3. And I just finished it in my Thursday class. And you can even listen to the talks on firstpower.info. If you go to firstpower.info and then you click talks by Dr. Anil Mehta, you can listen to talks on Bhakti Sudha. But that beautiful text written, it says the Lord then becomes your servant. Then he says, okay, yes, sir, what can I do for you? Once you work for him, then he becomes your servant. And that's the idea is not that you get the ego that Lord is my servant, but the Lord says, now I have responsibility to take care of this individual and do his work for him. So yeah, no, good deeds always get, but what he was trying to say was that if I commit a murder, will you go to hell for me? No, that's not going to happen. Now, if she knowingly knew that he was murdering people and bringing the money, then yeah, and if she participated in that. But she apparently was ignorant. She didn't know what he did for a living. All he did was at the end of the day, he brought whatever money. So, you know, she was not a participant. But if, yeah, she was actively involved in hiding the money or, you know, cheating and all, then yeah. So the karmas, you have to bear your own karmas. Nobody else can bear them for you. But definitely good deeds definitely transfer to your children. It is very clear. Thank you. That's a good question. Thank you. Yes?
What is a vasana?
Vasanas are our desires, selfish desires, tendencies. The latent tendencies which make me do what I do. Like an alcoholic has an alcoholic vasana. He loves to drink. A sportsman has a sports vasana. He loves to play basketball 5 hours a day. A spiritual person may have a spiritual vasana where she goes to church or temple or mosque. So vasanas are our tendencies or our desires that we are born with, some of them. And the reason we are born because of vasanas. Vasanas is called the causal body, which causes me to take this particular form. But then through this lifetime, you have the tendency or you have the choice of converting negative vasanas to positive vasanas, going from negative to positive, like the prayer of Saint Francis, you know, where there is anger, let me bring love, and so on. And ultimately, when the person's selfish desires become minimal and his mind becomes quiet, then he becomes aware of the Lord's presence. The vasanas are the curtain which obscures. We are all are actually divine. We all are Jesus, we all are Buddha, we all are Krishna. But not knowing that I am because of my vasanas, I selfishly think I am this body, mind and intellect and this world is real. But actually when the vasanas become stilled, minimal, then you become close to the truth. And we'll talk in more detail about that next week. We will be talking into what is the difference between the world, God and the Brahman. it's a very beautiful verse. It's very, very difficult and very powerful verse. I'll try my best, whatever I can.
Impressions and the memories.
Yes. Impressions and the memories, yes. Absolutely, right.
And some of those can be carried from life to life.
Yes, yes. In fact, that is the reason. If you had no vasanas, you would be a realized master. You wouldn't be born again. Each one of us takes birth because we have unfulfilled vasanas. And if you multiply them and add more selfish desires, I, my, then you will be strengthening that and you will continue to take more births. But a saint, if you find the saints, they have minimal desires, right? What do they want? If you look at the Swamijis who come to the mission, they have three pairs of clothes, orange, that's it. Look at Jesus, how simply he lived his life. Did he acquire a palace or, you know, a big following or kingdom? Nothing. He had nothing. So these saints have minimum possessions, and whatever knowledge they have, they give it to the world. Buddha, he could have been the king of, you know, Nepal, but he chose to give up everything to reach Nirvana. So because they have minimum desires, minimum selfishness. And Swami Chinmayananda says, live in the minimum and create the maximum and give it all to the world. So these saints live with the minimum. So they have minimum vasanas, and whatever knowledge they have, they share with the world. So the goal of life is to reduce the vasanas and ultimately go beyond them to the truth.
You can have good vasanas.
Yes, yes. You can have a good desires to serve. That is good, but that also can become a bondage. You say, like, I want to serve the world, right? So I decide to go out and serve. And somebody in my institution becomes an obstacle and doesn't let me serve. I want to serve, but he doesn't let me. So then I try to kick him out or I try to undermine him. So even in the world of service, people get into politics. We find even in spirituality, there is so much jealousy. So service is good, but when service becomes such a goal where then I do anything and everything, then that service also can become a bondage. Yes, service is good, but it should be done with the right attitude, without I or my. But yeah, that's a very good point. You remove the negative to the positive. Ultimately, even the desire to serve goes away and the person becomes a spontaneous. See, one is I desire to serve. I want to serve. Other one is spontaneously I become an instrument of service. But there is no I. And I disappears and he alone works. Thank you. That's a good point.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhavave. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi, Harihi Om Shri Guru Hari Namah.
Thank you very much.